Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Migration and Diaspora podcast, where we discuss topics, projects, ideas, and everything else related to the movement of people. And today I'm joined by David Martineau, who is Senior Program Manager at the International Organization for Migration, IOM, at headquarters, who tells us all about the Migration Governance Indicators Program, the MGI program. But first, a little bit about David. So as Senior Program Manager within IOM's Department of Policy and Research, David works on building governments' capacities to understand how their policy frameworks could better respond to emerging challenges and opportunities stemming from current migration dynamics. In his decade career working at IOM, he has worked on IOM's engagement in the Sustainable Development Goals, the New Urban Agenda, among other multilateral processes. He was deployed to Moldova for the Ukraine response and worked on UN partnerships in New York. And before IOM, David studied and worked in Germany, the Ukraine, Russia, and Canada. David holds master's degrees from the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto and Queen's University in Canada. It was an absolute pleasure to have David on the show to tell us all about how IOM helps different countries from around the world to assess their migration governance frameworks. We start by talking through what migration governance actually means, the indicators used to measure migration governance, and how the constructive approach to MGI assessments have had a number of positive knock-on effects for the countries and municipalities who have benefited from the program. I'd like to thank you very much for tuning in. And if you're enjoying this episode, why not leave a review on your favorite podcasting platform? Anyway, without further ado, thanks again and enjoy the show. Good morning, David Martineau. Welcome to the Migration and Diaspora podcast. How are you doing and where are you calling in from?
I'm very good, thank you. Good morning. I'm currently calling from Geneva, Switzerland, where I'm based.
Fantastic. And what is your own migration and diaspora story? Because I believe you're not Swiss yourself.
I'm not Swiss indeed. So I'm born in Montreal, Canada. But I've been out of Montreal since I was 20. I think the first time I migrated was to live in Russia, where I spent 6 months when I was 20 to study abroad. And I think that's when I sort of discovered that I would probably never live in Montreal again. I really enjoyed being exposed to different cultures, being in a context where I don't speak the language properly, where I need to try to get by and trying to live in different contexts has always been a fascination of mine. I've lived in Ukraine afterwards, in Moldova, in Germany, and New York, which wasn't the most different context I've been in. And now I'm in Geneva. So for the past 15 years or so, I've lived abroad.
Wonderful story. And well, we actually have a bit of that Montreal connection because, as some listeners may or may not know, I did my undergraduate studies in Montreal. And I was looking at your LinkedIn profile earlier in preparation for this interview. And actually, we were in Montreal at exactly the same time. Uh-huh. Well, obviously, you were there for a lot longer, but we did our studies at exactly the same time from 2008 to 2011. And I actually did a exchange semester at University of Montreal, where you studied as well. So we must have been running around the same streets at approximately the same time.
Yeah, interesting. So, and we might have been in the same classes then.
Exactly. And also just a quick question as well, because you're from Montreal, so you're from Quebec, and you have a French name. And so would you identify as part of the French diaspora?
It's an interesting question, in fact, and I was reflecting upon this when you asked your first question. So I don't feel part of the French diaspora. In fact, I was on a trip with my father where we met some ancestors or some people with my last name in Burgundy 2 weeks ago. And basically, we were reflecting upon the fact that my family or my ancestors left France in the 18th century or so. So it's been a long, long time. No, exactly. That being said, when I did my master's degree, or both of my master's degree in the English part of Canada in Ontario, I did feel like I was a migrant to some extent. I left for my first master's without speaking proper English. So there again, there was part of my story that where I had to integrate into culture that wasn't necessarily mine. For those who don't know Canada, it's very much possible to live your whole life in Montreal or in Quebec without speaking a single word of French, which was my case before moving for my master's degree. So when I was in Ontario, I did feel as part of the Quebec diaspora, if you will.
You mean it's possible to live in Quebec without speaking English?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Really interesting story, David. Let's get on to the topic of the day, which is all about the Migration Governance Indicators Program that you manage. And I think a good starting point for any discussion about migration governance indicators is, what is migration governance? And then we can talk about what indicates good migration governance. Yeah, let's just start by defining, what is migration governance?
There, I think that there's different definitions. Our departure point to look into the migration governance indicators and why we decided to focus on migration governance was the adoption of the SDGs. So there was this target on well-managed migration policies. And so back then in IOM, we were trying to understand what it meant. And so back then, we tried to look into all definitions of good migration governance, and not only policies, but also institutional setups, laws, all mechanisms to govern the movement of people. And so we came up with this definition called the Migration Governance Framework. The idea was, so we came up to the conclusion that it's very difficult to have one definition of good migration governance, very difficult to have one definition that fits all contexts. So we tried to come up with a set of guiding principles and objectives that policymakers, people that work on migration governance, have to take into consideration when they develop policies, laws, shape up their institutions. We came up with six building blocks of migration governance, which are the adherence to international standards, looking into human rights of migrants, looking at the partnerships that governments need to foster in order to manage migration, not only within the government, looking at partnerships between national and local levels, for instance, but also with civil society, international organizations, etc. And looking at how governments use data to shape their migration policy, so evidence-based policies, looking at the socioeconomic well-being of migrants, labor integration, for instance, bilateral labor agreements, things like that, looking at the crisis dimensions of human mobility, questions like climate change that are more and more relevant these days, and finally, looking at the security dimensions of migration, if you will, topics such as countering human trafficking, questions related to border management, things like this. So we came up with this definition that was adopted in 2015 by IOM member states, which we're using as the basis of any work today that we do on migration governance per se. So it's a bit technical, but basically we really felt like we have to come up with such a definition because there were so many definitions out there that it was necessary.
I think it's useful that you explain that as well. It seems like a very holistic way of looking at how migration is managed. I just make that point because to the layperson who may have stumbled onto this podcast, when you say something like strong migration governance, it might sound like restrictive migration management, which is not what you're talking about. You're talking about taking a broad look at how migration, how a country or even a locality manages migration to ensure that it works for all those affected migrants and the communities of origin, communities of transit, communities of destination, anyone affected by migration and how they link that to development and things like that. When we talk about the migration governance indicators, so you mentioned the MIGOF framework, so that and you mentioned some of the criteria. So are those the migration governance indicators themselves? How many criteria are there within that?
So basically, what we did is we used this definition, so these six building blocks of the migration governance framework, to develop a list of 98 indicators or so. When we look at migration governance indicators, or when people see the name, they feel like it's something very technical, that we're looking into quantitative indicators. In fact, it's much more simple than people think. We have a list of 98 questions that look at what policies, what strategies are in place to manage migration. And as you said, when we look at this, we're not necessarily looking only at the restrictive type of policies or policies related to border management, but also questions such as, do migrants have access to health services? Do they have equal access to education? Does the government have bilateral labor agreements in place to ensure that there are more regular pathways for migration? So we have very simple questions that can be most of the time responded by yes, no, or sometimes we use partially. For instance, if you have a policy that dates back from 1951 or 1967, we'll say, yes, you have something in place, but it might be outdated. And we use those questions to establish what governments have in place, what are some good practices, but also, and maybe most importantly, what are some potential gaps that they would want to address? Now, maybe one small caveat. So we have those 98 questions. I think it's important to note that not all questions are relevant to all governments. We're really not trying to prescribe a one-size-fits-all model to migration management or migration policy. We're trying to say, well, those are 98 things that some governments have found useful in their specific context to manage migration. Maybe one example on that, and I'm often using the same example, being Canadian, I use an example from Canada. But when Canada participated in the MGI process, there was one of the gaps that we've identified, which is the fact that they don't have diaspora policy in Canada, which has been a good example from Kenya, for instance. Ireland has a great diaspora policy. So we came to them and said, well, is that something that you would want to develop? And they said, well, that's simply not a priority for Canada. When we think about migration, we want to look at people that migrate to Canada, and this is where our efforts will go. So we simply decided to discard that question, looking at what the government thinks are priorities for the foreseeable future. So it's a relatively flexible framework that we use to work with governments based on their specific context to identify what are good practices and what are things that they would want to work on in the future.
So you have these 98 indicators, and we'll link, of course, to some documents in the show notes that so listeners can delve into all of those different indicators. And I also feel you could have come up with a couple more just to get it to around 100 indicators. But anyway, so there's 98 indicators. And what is the result of these assessments in the sense that do you end up tallying up all the scores and coming up with a final score at the end? Or is it a case of you provide scores for these different things, for these different indicators? You know, you will provide some sort of scale, as you said, like some are yes or no answers, or some might be partial. And then it provides a bit of a guide where you can look for the gaps and come to more, I suppose, qualitative conclusions.
So I'd say that there are two outcomes to the process. The first one is, so basically we collect information on those 98 questions. We develop matrix, we call it, with the responses to the 98 questions. Then we work with the government to prioritize what are the most relevant questions. And we draft a short report that looks at good practices and areas for further development. And then that is sort of the main document that comes out of this process. Now, to me, this is sort of the public part of the process. You can find all of those reports on the IOM website. That being said, to me, the most important part and the main outcome of this process is how the government decides to use this dialogue, no, this process. The one part that's probably the most important part of this process is the fact that we engage with all parts of the government, ministries of health, labor, justice, migration, of course, diaspora. So we try to engage with all relevant ministers to have an honest discussion on what are some of the gaps in the current structures, the current policies of the government uses to manage migration. And sometimes it's also an opportunity for the government to reflect on how the society has shifted. Now, a lot of governments that participate in this process used to be countries of origin and increasingly become countries of transit or destination. So they do need to adapt their policies. And several governments use this process to have discussions on, okay, what do we need to put in place now to respond not only to the challenges of today, but also challenges and the opportunities that will come tomorrow. And I'm very pleased to have seen countless governments use the process to start developing, for instance, a new adaptation plan for climate change that includes mobility dimensions of, well, dimensions related to migration. Governments during COVID that have used the process to include migrants in their health policies. So there's the official process that leads to this report, but there is also the beginning of a more important process where the government reflects upon how they can develop new policies, how they can adapt their current policies to the migration dynamics that they are facing and that they will be facing in coming years.
What is the difference between, for instance, following the MGI process, engaging in this MGI process, versus a government just deciding to look at its own policies and decide where its own gaps are and then to take steps to address those gaps, or indeed to encourage civil society or to listen to their own civil society and what they're saying about the weaknesses in their migration governance?
I think three things. The first one is the fact that we are using a standard methodology. So we are going through the same list of questions with all countries, and this results in standardized reports, standardized process that can help countries have discussions with similar countries, either from the same region that have participated in the process, or countries from other regions that might be facing similar challenges. To give you an example, in January or February, we're confirming the date, we'll have a discussion with Portuguese-speaking countries, the 9 Portuguese-speaking countries around the world. Out of them, 7 have participated in the MGI, and we'll organize a discussion based on those 6 pillars that I've mentioned, the migration governance framework, to look into how those countries manage migration and a lot of the migration within those countries. A lot of Portuguese speakers migrate to Portuguese-speaking countries. So using the same framework allows for a better dialogue. The second point I wanted to mention is it's a standardized process. We try to involve all relevant ministries, but we also make sure to involve other UN agencies, civil society, increasingly private sector. So we try to basically help the government organize a multi-stakeholder consultation on migration governance. In some countries, we go through existing channels. They have this process in place. In others, they don't. So we try to use this process to create the structures for such a dialogue. In fact, in Iraq recently, we used the MGI process to create a new interministerial committee on migration, then started involving civil society in the development of a new national migration policy. And so through this assessment, we were able to set up the structure that was able to engage with relevant actors in the country to contribute to the development of a national migration policy. And this is the case in quite a few countries. And then the last point I wanted to mention is through this process, one thing that we're really trying to do is to connect the process to other projects or other opportunities for government to receive funding to build their capacity on certain sectors. In fact, in Angola, one example that comes to mind, one of the clear gaps that we saw in the MGR process is that there was a need to train government officials or to boost their capacity on counter-trafficking. And so we, after the MGR process, IOM and other partners in the country developed counter-trafficking training for relevant government officials in the country. So we tried to tie this process to other available resources that could help the government strengthen certain areas of their migration governance.
So it sounds like a really useful diagnostic tool that can really be the start of many other improvements that can take place in a country. And I'll just also share an anecdote from a recent story of mine. Also, if anyone can hear my baby in the background, there's a apologies for that. That's a bit of audio verite. But recently I conducted a similar assessment in Ghana, and I was quite surprised at how just conducting quite a short-term assessment of comprehensive assessment of a country's migration governance framework can enable you to identify some big gaps that just go unnoticed. Ghana, for instance, is a country where they've got a lot of donor support historically, and there's a lot of consultants like myself who go in and do different assessments on different things in the field of migration and others, of course. And yet I was surprised that just by myself conducting this comprehensive assessment, A, it's actually quite rare to take a very comprehensive look at migration, because a lot of interventions, a lot of work on migration focuses on a very specific area of migration. By taking that comprehensive look, we were able to notice some really glaring holes in their migration governance framework. And then that enables us to then start that conversation about how do we address those gaps. So I do think that these types of assessments are really valuable. David, give me a bit of a, or give us all a bit of an understanding of your footprint to date. So the MGI program has been going on since what year did it start?
So we started the program. The first ever results have been published in 2016. So I usually use that date as the beginning of the program. And so since 2016, we've covered 111 countries. So 111 countries have participated in the process. And since 2018, we've also started working with local governments. And to date, 91 local governments have participated in the process. And among those governments, the 111, 91, several, around 30 governments have participated in follow-up assessments, meaning that they've conducted the first assessment, say in 2016, 2017, and then a second assessment 3 or 4 years later to track the progress that they've done on migration governance using the same indicators. I think to date, I've been saying this in several meetings and no one's ever contradicted me. So this is the biggest, or the IOM program with the biggest footprint and the biggest database on migration governance worldwide. We have around 30,000 observations on migration governance. So increasingly, we're trying to use this database to come up with reports on global trends on migration governance.
That also reminds me to just point out that the MGI assessments have also been integrated into the IOM's Global Migration Data Center, the GMDAC as well. I found that out when, or I realized that when I currently I'm doing some work in Nigeria. So when I've been researching migration trends and the migration profile of Nigeria lately, I ended up all quite organically coming across the MGI profile for Nigeria. And equally, when I was doing some work in Ghana recently, I came across the MGI profile for the city of Accra. So, yeah, it's very useful, I think, that you've managed to integrate that into such an important data platform. Give us a sense as well of how an MGI assessment is conducted. Give us a snapshot of what that process looks like, given country or locality.
Yeah, so basically every year, what we do around June or so is that we reach out to all IOM country missions to say, well, we are opening 25, 30, 35 spots for the following year. So the process lasts 1 year to conduct such assessments. So this year we'll do around 35, I think. And then we look which governments would be interested. The main thing that we look into is, of course, geographical diversity, but also, and most importantly, where could this process be most helpful? Is there a government that is currently thinking about developing a new migration policy? Is there a sub-region that is looking at developing migration governance structures? It's the case for the CARICOM this year that we'll be working on the new regional migration policy. And so we've tried to boost a little bit our coverage of CARICOM states this year. So trying to see where can we have the biggest impact. Then the process has basically four steps. The first one is to brief the government, making sure that they're fully on board. This is a purely voluntary process. So we make sure that we have a letter from the government confirming that they want to participate. We brief all relevant ministries in the country. And then once this is done, we start what we call the data collection. So basically finding the responses to the 98 questions. And for that, we with a partner, The Economist Impact, which is the research branch of The Economist magazine. We've been working with them since 2016. And so basically what they do is background research, trying to find responses to those 98 questions with publicly available documents. And they complement that research with a number of key informant interviews to complement some of the information that we can't find online or that seems to be outdated, making sure that we have all relevant responses in that matrix that I've mentioned. Now, after that, we have a rigorous process of vetting this information. The information goes to our Global Migration Data Analysis Center in Berlin, having a look at all the responses. Then we send those responses to our country mission in the country that is covered. They have a look at everything, and then we send that information to the government that vets all the information that we have and also takes the opportunity to prioritize the most relevant questions. So normally for each of the six domains, the six pillars that I've mentioned, we select six, seven topics that we will see as priorities for the country. Once we have this prioritization exercise completed, we go back to the drawing board to start drafting the report. Similar, the information goes back to The Economist Impact, then to GMDEC in Berlin, then to the country mission, and then to the government vets the report that looks at good practices and areas for further development. Once we have a solid draft report, we go through what I think is the most important step, the interministerial consultation, or maybe we should call it multi-stakeholder consultation, where we have all relevant ministries in the room, civil society, UN agencies, sometimes local authorities, migrant groups. So we try to have a broad consultation to do two things. First one, to make sure that all the information that we have in the report is correct, and that we're not missing anything that deserves to be in this report. But second, and most importantly, starting a discussion on what can be done. How can we use this report? What are some of the gaps that we've identified? And there we've had numerous really interesting discussions with governments. One thing that we haven't mentioned yet is the fact that, yes, governments can do those assessments, but most governments, including in the most developed countries, don't necessarily, or the branches of the governments don't necessarily talk to one another. We've had a recent case, a country I won't name, where the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was trying to develop a program for digital nomads. And they tried and tried and tried for a year and faced all kinds of bureaucratic hurdles. And at the end, the program failed because legally, people couldn't stay in the country for more than a year, and they thought it was too complicated to change the law, as the Ministry of Foreign Affairs couldn't do it on its own. And then during the consultation, Migration Ministry heard this hurdle and simply said, well, this is something we can do very easily. And then so the Migration Ministry changed the law, and the program was finally able to pass. And for us, it was interesting to see that they hadn't spoken to one another before the MGI process. So we also use this process to make sure that all ministries are aware of what the others are doing. So that's the multi-stakeholder consultation. And at the end, we try to finalize the report. If the government gives the green light, we publish it on our webpage. So far, all governments have given their green light for publication, but we really want to make sure that they're comfortable with the report, as this is not, our intention is not to point the finger at some of the gaps or to publish something that the government wouldn't be comfortable with. So that's sort of the final step of the process. And then in following years, we publish what we call a success stories booklet with all the stories of how governments have used the results to develop new policies or for the Global Compact on Migration or things like this.
We'll link to those success stories in the show notes. And I also came across a video that I think you reshared on your LinkedIn, and I saw that, where the mayor of Santiago in Chile also giving some really great testimonials about the utility of the Migration Governance Indicators Assessment in Santiago. And so there are some really amazing stories that have come out. Let's talk a bit about the future of the Migration Governance Indicators program. So it's a long-running program, especially for a very projectized organization like IOM. It's been going for such a long time, and it's seems like it's got a sort of rolling project framework as opposed to a lot of very time-bound projects, which is good, I think, so that you can have that continuity and do follow-ups and so on. You mentioned that you've got quite a lot of assessments coming up in the next year. One thing I wanted to ask is about how the Global Compact for Migration, the GCM, is impacting our understanding of what good migration governance involves, and whether or not how that's impacting the way that you conduct your MGI assessments. Because now we've got this GCM, which has a lot of different areas where, as a global community, as states around the world, agreed on a number of objectives, essentially, of what good migration governance consists. So it's got those 23 objectives plus the guiding principles. And so I'm wondering how that is impacting how you conduct MGI assessments, if at all, or indeed how you might adjust your methodologies in the future.
I must say it has impacted the way in which we've conducted those assessments in a lot of countries, maybe starting from the negotiations of the GCM. One thing that we've done as soon as the GCM was adopted is to look at our list of indicators and make sure that we cover all 23 objectives. And in fact, we had to add a number of questions, notably on xenophobia and on alternatives to detention. And we tried to add a number of other questions to make sure that we have enough questions in our methodology to be able to help states track their progress, at least on the policy aspects of the Global Compact. So right now, the 98 questions can be mapped against the 23 objectives, which can help countries either develop plans of action for the GCM, they can use it for their voluntary reports to the regional reviews or to the IMRF. In fact, roughly 35 countries or so have used the MGI for their GCM efforts. Countries like Ireland, Canada, Portugal, Sierra Leone, Timor-Leste have used the MGI in their regional reports. Others have used it in the IMRF. And right now
By the way, is the International Migration Review Forum, for those of us
yes.
who are not really in the world that we're in.
Apologies for speaking in acronyms. And yeah, and right now we're working with a number of countries, including El Salvador, to look at how the MGI can be used to develop the Global Compact on Migration plans of action. So really several countries, we had to adapt the process to make sure that it's relevant for their needs. Not only on GCM, but also on sustainable development goals to report on their achievements, which was the case in Dominican Republic, Kuwait, and a number of other countries.
MIGOF is still the framework of reference right now.
Yeah, for SDG 10.7 on well-managed migration governance. And now on the GCM, there is a discussion on a limited list of indicators, and the MGI is heavily referenced in that document right now.
Great. And just remind us again of some of the MGI assessments that are ongoing and coming up, just so that we can, you know, listeners who are interested in particular countries that you reference might be able to follow.
Yeah, as I said, we have roughly 35 assessments going on this year. At the national level, we have countries like Barbados. I've mentioned the plans to have a CARICOM policy developed, so we're trying to boost our capacity in that region. We have an assessment going on in the Bahamas as well. We have Burundi, we have Colombia. In Colombia, this will be linked to a new national migration policy. And there we're also trying to include the private sector, including some of the main sectors of the economy, thinking about the coffee industry, tourism, things like this. We have Ethiopia going on. In Ethiopia, they will try to adopt a new national migration policy, but also a new IDP proclamation. So looking at internal displacement in the country. We have Kazakhstan performing a follow-up assessment. So trying to track the progress that they've done. This is linked to the GCM, in fact, in the country. In Mozambique, they're again looking at dimensions of internal displacement. Very interesting country. Also looking at the impacts of climate change in the country, especially provoking internal displacement. We will have an assessment, a follow-up assessment in Nepal, Slovenia, Tunisia.
What about some of the local ones?
In the local ones, one of the most, in fact, two most interesting ones, according to me this year, we have one in the state of Baja California. I think it's the 11th Mexican state participating in the MGI. And there we're really looking at emerging or continuing dynamics of migration, especially at the border with the United States, looking at how at the state level they are developing programs to manage migration. The other super interesting one that we're doing is two cities at the border between Guinea and Liberia. And so we're conducting both of those assessments at the same time, and we will have one meeting at the end to sort of share how those two cities can collaborate, can continue to collaborate on those trans-border dynamics that they are facing. So that will be two of the most interesting local ones. Otherwise, we continue to have other assessments in Brazil, in Uruguay, Honduras, Chile, Malawi. And so the list goes on and on.
Very, very diverse set of places. How much travel do you have to do to these different places?
Quite a bit. Now, I'm lucky enough, we have a relatively big team of 20 people, including several people that come from the regions that we are covering. So myself, I try to cover as many as I can, but we have several colleagues in the team that are also able to travel. We're covering a city in El Salvador this year, and we luckily have one teammate from that very city. So yeah, I guess I cover maybe eight countries a year. Yeah, I can pick and choose.
You can pick and choose the ones that sound fun to go to.
We go with the language requirements as well. So we try to cover the ones where we speak the language.
Great. Well, really interesting program and exciting work plan you've got for the coming year. Thank you so much, David, for coming onto the show. Thank you for your time and insights. And lastly, how can listeners connect with you and learn more about the MGI program?
So to learn more, they can go on the MGI webpage, which is part of the data portal of IOM. I guess we can put the link in the description of this podcast. And to contact me, they can write to me directly, dmartineau, my last name, at iom.int. And I'll be happy to discuss any of the topics that we've mentioned in this podcast today.
Fantastic. Thank you once again, David, and best of luck for the coming year.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Migration and Diaspora podcast, powered by Homelands Advisory, your independent migration and diaspora agency. If you've enjoyed the show and would like to support our channel, please feel free to share it or leave a review via your preferred podcasting platform. You can access the channel's full archive and show notes by visiting homelandsadvisory.com/podcast, where you can also get in touch if you'd like to be on the show. Thank you again, and see you next time.